Nuclear Meltdown, Nuclear Aftermath. On March 28, 1979, 47 years ago, an accident at the Unit 2 nuclear reactor at Three Mile Island near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, resulted in a meltdown of core fuel rods, a release of radioactivity into the air that contaminated the local community and beyond, and generated enough public opposition to nuclear that the industry's new builds virtually ground to a halt. TMI-2 never started again. Unit 1 continued in service until it was finally shut down in September 2019. But now, after 6.5 years up on the blocks, plant owner Constellation, formerly Exelon, is planning to restart this 1974 model nuclear reactor to provide electricity that will be sold exclusively to Bill Gates to power a Microsoft data center. Besides major business questions about using a facility built with public funds to exclusively fuel a private for-profit enterprise, there's the question of safety for a nuclear reactor designed in the 1960s that started operating in 1974, 52 years ago. And then, of course, there's the ongoing problem of what to do with the radioactive waste already generated. It takes a veteran activist to sort through all the details and make the points about how wrongheaded the decisions have been and continue to be about this site. And when he tells us,
we, the government, Department of Energy, through the Department of Treasury, will pay each site that has waste millions of dollars every year. So these sites are never going to get cleaned up because you make money by doing nothing.
And there's so much more that's wrong. Well, when Eric Epstein of Three Mile Island Alert, who has racked up more years and miles protesting against TMI than probably anyone else, puts it in such clear terms, you see how this nuclear relic remains a raging outpost of that awful, dangerous, deadly seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat, what are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat, what have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat, the corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat, it's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who want to know something, and people who know something who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we acknowledge the 47th anniversary of the 1979 accident at the Three Mile Island nuclear power station by getting an update on why TMI is once again in the news and not in a good way. We talk with Eric Epstein, chairman of Three Mile Island Alert, a safe energy organization based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And that's how we're going to get the latest on TMI Units 1 and 2, the Microsoft Data Center, Bill Gates, and how Pennsylvania residents and ratepayers are once again getting the short end of the nuclear stick. We will also have an excerpt from the Nuclear Hot Seat 3 Mile Island 40th Anniversary Program, a short audio mosaic of what it was like to experience that nuclear meltdown from only 1 mile away, which is where I was staying at the time. The report includes clips from media reports and is anchored by my interview with Mary Osborne, also known as Mary Stamos, a local resident whose work into plant mutations following the meltdown is now held by the Smithsonian Institution. Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2026, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. The first part of our TMI commemoration is an excerpt from an audio tour of what it was like to experience the nuclear meltdown up close and personal. In my case, from only 1 mile from where I was staying with friends. The report includes excerpts from media coverage of the time and is anchored by my interview with Mary Osborne, also known as Mary Stamos. She was a longtime Middletown resident who lived only 6.5 miles from the reactor and had no previous history as an activist. She became involved immediately after the accident when she noticed plant mutations, known as fasciation, that can be traced to radiation exposure. Her collection of mutated plants and flowers was accepted by the Smithsonian Institution in 2019 and is now preserved, digitized, and made available to the public by the Smithsonian. Mary Stamos Osborne passed away on February 19, 2024. This interview with her was conducted at the 40th anniversary commemoration of the accident at Three Mile Island and appeared on Nuclear Hot Seat number 407 from April 10, 2019. Here, she fills us in on how she learned about the radiation releases from Three Mile Island on the third day after the accident.
The next morning, around 8:30 or 9:30, all of a sudden, I heard sirens ringing and the church bells were ringing, which I never heard like this, and all of the sirens were ringing in this area. And I turned the TV on. I didn't see anything. Then I turned my radio on, and I hear the newscaster, Ron Drake, talking about having uncontrolled radiation releases from Three Mile Island. And that's when I really started to panic. And a little bit later, the one person, I don't know who it was, that we consider him a hero, he turned the sirens on in Harrisburg, and the people started to panic, and they were hearing all the news about what was happening. And then the governor, Thornburg, was kind of forced into talking about radiation, you know, and the exposure that people might be getting.
Governor Thornburg.
Based on advice of the chairman of the NRC, and in the interest of taking every precaution, I am advising those who may be particularly susceptible to the effects of any radiation, that is, pregnant women and preschool-aged children, to leave the area within a 5-mile radius of the Three Mile Island facility until further notice.
And like I said, I'm 6.5 miles away, but I was still worried.
The whole idea of being able to evacuate the community that size is absurd. It's been absurd all along, and it's just governmental and utility nonsense to talk about being able to cope with a situation by evacuation because you're never going to get the people out.
Alone in a house without a TV and with no radio on, I knew nothing of the panic and the chaos around me, and instead sat and continued writing on my musical, coincidentally entitled Armageddon. That is, until I heard an announcement come down the street, and in order to try to understand it, ran downstairs and opened the front door to hear the full announcement included the information: stay indoors, keep your doors and windows closed, do not go outside unless you absolutely have to. Here's why, as it finally came across in the media.
It began at 6:40 this morning and lasted until 9 o'clock. Another unexpected and substantial release of radiation into the atmosphere from reactor number 2. It produced a huge cloud of radioactive xenon gas and radiation levels 10 times the amount considered safe for the general public to be exposed to in a full year.
The new information is this. The accident sent ionized radiation beaming through the plant's 4-foot-thick walls. Consequently, the metal shield that protects the nuclear fuel may have been damaged.
Suddenly, everything I had been made afraid of during the Cold War as coming from the Russians was threatening my life from just 1 mile away, courtesy my own government and the local utility.
I had no means of transportation, knew nobody in the area except my friends who were at work, and even the house I was staying in had no basement in which to hide from the radiation. For all I knew, the radiation level was so high that, in essence, I was already dead. outside Three Mile Island, all was bedlam.
It's like your house is on fire, and you only have so many minutes to think, and you don't know which to grab first, and you don't know what to do, and you don't know where to go, and if you do go, you have to go with the idea that you're never coming back. Now, it's one hell of a horrible experience.
People were concerned. You could tell that they were afraid because a lot of people left town, left their doors wide open, unlocked, just put anything in a car and take off. They had a run on a bank. People needed money to go where they were going, and it was just a mess.
The children left in school were not immune to the trauma.
The schools were in a panic, the kids. A lot of them thought about dying, and they had written their last wills and testament, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade kids.
The reporters who had swarmed to Three Mile Island to capture the story and were not immune to its long-term consequences often betrayed their own nervousness.
Yeah, a lot of people are leaving the Harrisburg area right now. My own family's on the way to New York City right now to stay with relatives. A lot of people, the gas stations are flooded. The banks were busy. People were withdrawing some of their money so they could get out of here.
I didn't have a car that morning, so I talked to my neighbor, and she said that we could go to her mother's house. So I got my son ready. I went to school to get my daughter out of school. And her teacher was really upset because she had children that she couldn't go get until all her children from the school were leaving. So when we got to the school, got my daughter, and then we went to my friend's mother's home, that was about 10 miles. And then my husband was still out of town. He worked at a telephone company, and when he tried to call, he couldn't even get through. The phone lines were so jammed.
I had the exact same problem trying to call out. There was this weird siren sound on the line that wouldn't let me get through.
Oh, wow.
My friends finally did get through to me on the phone, which had been jammed with no lines available. They picked me up, and we evacuated to friends of theirs who lived 150 miles away, which we hoped was far enough. I stayed there for the next 10 days and then flew out, away from Harrisburg, away from Middletown, and Three Mile Island. So I missed having a community of people who, together, were able to process, commiserate, and get angry, much of it in a legal way, at the powers that be at Three Mile Island. But I also missed the worst of the follow-up information. Mary Stamos.
When I got my daughter ready to go back to school the one morning, I was brushing her hair, and she had thick, lovely hair, blondish, and a whole lot of hair came out in the hairbrush, and it kind of freaked me out. I gave my son a little bath, and I saw a whole wad of hair in the tub, which I never had experienced before. And when I looked at his scalp, I could see his scalp, and it wasn't solid hair. And I didn't think a whole lot of it because I thought when radiation caused hair fall out, I thought you would be bald. I didn't know until a couple years later that you could just have a certain degree of hair loss. I didn't know what was going to happen to us in the future if we'd all get cancer or whatever.
Other problems noticed and documented by Mary Stamos in the immediate aftermath of Three Mile Island include a sudden growth spurt in some of her plants, as much as 4 inches in less than a week. Mutated flowers, branching out into multiples that did not previously exist in nature. A rose that grew out of the middle of another rose, but with no reproductive components visible on either of them. And dandelion leaves that were 3 feet long. These are all evidence of a process known as fasciation, which are mutations in plant life following exposure to radiation. Fasciation has also been observed at Fukushima and Chernobyl. Changes in animal birth and development were also noted in the first year after Three Mile Island.
The cats and the ducks seem to be the most vulnerable, and that's possible that this is occurring because you have a higher reproductive rate. It's faster, the turnover is faster. You know, they live in an environment, hunt in an environment, feed off the environment, they bathe themselves, so if there's anything there it's going to show. Okay, what we encounter is we have at least 3 male toms right now that will not breed. They're old enough to breed. Evidently, they're sterile. They won't breed at all. And we encounter a lot of miscarriages in the cats. You know, they swell up, look like they're pregnant, and then there's nothing. The litters are very small now, anywhere from 1 to 4 is most you'll see in a litter anymore. And usually, litters that run at least 6, but the most we're getting is 4, and the kittens are very small. And the development stage is so slow, it's unbelievable.
Animal mutations and animal deaths followed.
There was a lady at one of the first meetings I ever attended, the public NRC meeting. She stood up and asked a question of the NRC or MedEd, the Metropolitan Edison, the TMI owners. And she wanted to know when they were going to pay her for her losses of animals. And she had a dog kennel or a poodle kennel. And her poodles was born with no eyes. It had eye sockets, but no eyes. And she lived right down across the street from Three Mile Island. They paid her every penny that she asked for, but she was not allowed to talk about it.
Mary Stamos, also known as Mary Osborne, had much more to say about this. And you can hear her in my archival compilation of clips from the time that the accident was actually happening. It's on our website, NuclearHotSeat.com, under episode number 509 from March 23rd, 2021. Three Mile Island is not some dead and gone story, and that's what this week's featured interview is about. Unit 1 is making headlines again as a proposed power source for Bill Gates' Microsoft data center. Meanwhile, the highly radioactive nuclear waste from the meltdown at Unit 2 and spent fuel rods from Unit 1 are still stored on site, and there is no ultimate resolution to this problem. To learn more about the current situation, I spoke with Eric Epstein. He is chairman of Three Mile Island Alert, a safe energy organization based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and founded in 1977. For more than 49 years, Epstein has specialized in research, litigation, and providing expert testimony on the decommissioning, decontamination, environmental safety, rate recovery, and waste isolation at nuclear reactors. No one knows the in and outs of legalities surrounding Three Mile Island better than him. I spoke with Eric Epstein on March 21st, 2026. Eric Epstein, it's always great having you here with us on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
This is our annual check-in on Three Mile Island to find out what's the latest, hopefully better news than it's been in the past. Let's get a sense of what's there and what's happened to date. There are two nuclear reactors at Three Mile Island, which is an island 12 miles downstream from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in the middle of the Susquehanna River. Unit 2 was involved in the meltdown, and Unit 1, which is currently at issue and a pretty hot topic. Let's start out with Unit 2. Briefly, what happened back in 1979?
Three Mile Island, the idea, the concept, was from the 1960s. So the first plant, TMI 1, came online in 74 at a cost of about $400 million, which is several billion by today's dollars. Unit 2 came online 4 years later, December 30th, 1978. The consistent connective tissue with nuclear power is that they're always, always over budget and behind schedule. These plants were no different, over budget, behind schedule. So TMI 2 was rushed. So it came online December 30th, 1978, because the company wanted it to get it into the rate base, which means they wanted to be able to charge customers. So they got it in, and the plant operated for less than 3 months, or 1/120th of its estimated lifetime. Now, there were warnings prior to the accident. Dresser Industries, which made the POR, the valve that failed, had shown indications of failing at TMI-2 and had failed the year earlier at Davis-Besse. So this is not an accident. This is a meltdown that could have been avoided, should have been avoided, and wasn't avoided for economic reasons. Dresser Industries actually notified the company that, hey, we got a 10% failure rate. You may want to take a look at this. They did. So March 28th, 1979, 11 days after the China Syndrome came out, The plant at 4 o'clock in the morning, the pilot operated relief valve was opened as it should. During that procedure, never closed. Didn't close till a Gary Miller turned the valve off, I think at 6 a.m. At that point, you already had a situation that you just couldn't put in reverse. And we didn't know until 1982 that the temperatures reached 4,800 degrees, which mean we had a core melt accident. The industry calls it a loss of coolant accident. Call it what you want. Half the core melted. Never a good thing. So what happened is not only did the plant melt, but the confidence in the company melted. Company had one press conference during this period, and that occurred in Hershey on the second day. And it was so awful that the media and the government lost trust in what the company was saying. In fact, the next day, on Thursday, Lieutenant Governor Scranton said, "We cannot tell you if the information we're getting is accurate or not."
And when you say the company, you're talking about Babcock and Wilcox?
When we talk about company in the context of TMI2 in 1979, they are a holding company. GPU, General Public Utilities, owns Three Mile Island. 50% is owned by Metropolitan Edison. MetEd was the operator at the time of the accident. 25% was owned by Jersey Central Power and Light, and 25% was owned by Penelec. And the reason I always like to tell people that is that very few communities in our area ever got energy from Three Mile Island. Metropolitan Edison at the time was an Allentown-based company. Jersey Central Power and Light was in Jersey, and Penelec was in Western Pennsylvania. So you have an accident that's occurring where MetEd, the operator at the time, really, I don't think had a good handle on what's happening. It just lied, deceived the community and the governor. So Friday, 2 days in, March 30th, school is still in session. School is still in session. It's very warm. People are outside. And the governor, as well as Joseph Henry, who was chairman of the NRC at the time, and I don't know which one said it, but they're going back and forth, and one of them said, "Oh my God, you know, we're like a blind man looking for a flashlight in a cave. You know, what do we do here?" And what they decided to do was a precautionary evacuation. So that was for pregnant women and preschool children. That population was 5 miles away from the plant. It's about 5,000 people. You can't regulate human behavior. So 144,000 people left. That became known as the shadow evacuation. You know, there's no environmental lead curtain 5 miles, 10 miles from a plant. What was worse, the emergency plans were a little more than an afterthought. So the children and the kids were taken to emergency shelters 12 miles from the plant. There was a psychic terror that people really didn't know what this was. They didn't trust the company. And for the first week, it was like a ghost town in Middletown. Nobody knew what was happening. Although they said only evacuate for this targeted population, folks were checking out what their neighbors did who worked at the plant. So I just want to emphasize that although we're 12 miles south of Harrisburg, this is largely an agricultural community. And nobody really understood that farmers aren't going to leave. So you have to make a decision. Do I leave my pet behind? Do I leave my cattle behind? Am I ever coming back? That can't be erased. You can't erase from your memory or from your experience the psychic terror that occurred for the week during the accident. Now, the people that own the plant and want to restart it, want to rename Three Mile Island the Christopher Crane Clean Energy Center. It's a whitewash. TMI Alert opposed it. And our core argument is you can't rewrite history. And if we change the name TMI to Christopher Crane, why don't we change the name of the Titanic to the Love Boat? Or down the road to Gettysburg, why don't we rename Pickett's Charge, you know, to Pickett's Victory? You know, when does it end? So everybody knows Three Mile Island, what it is and what happened. Again, we didn't really know until the Department of Energy provided us evidence that there was a core melt, 4,800 degrees. We were very lucky. The second part of the accident was a hydrogen bubble scare. When the fuel rods, and they're very thin, very long, metal elements become exposed to oxygen and they oxidize, they become hydrogen. So you had the meltdown into the hydrogen bubble. Carter came on Sunday. And I think to the extent you can say things started to get somewhat normal first week of April. And then after that, there was a huge battle over whether the other reactor not involved in the accident would restart. TMI-2 was defueled, which means the fuel was removed. Hasn't been decontaminated, hasn't been decommissioned, probably will never be cleaned up based on the announcements we heard this year.
And where is the fuel currently? Is it on site?
We believe that 1 to 3% of the fuel is still present on the island in TMI-2. It's ensconced. It's like a radioactive nachos. You know, you have all the combination of fuel, dust, different elements. Depending on who you talk to, most of the fuel is in Idaho. And the problem is when you look at the manifest, that fuel began leaking from its canisters 10 years after it was put in the canisters. So that fuel's been leaking for 20 years. There were a lot of mishaps. There was clearly opposition from Pittsburgh to Missouri to Idaho about the fuel. And they were right. The manifests are not in good condition. The only other fuel, this is ironic, stored at Idaho is Peach Bottom 1, which was an experimental reactor 30 miles down the river at Peach Bottom. It is a legacy reactor from Adams for Peace. It's still in the rate base. So we're still paying for Peach Bottom 1, a 70 megawatt reactor that operated from 67 to 73. So it's ironic that the bunkmates in Idaho are from Pennsylvania, Peach Bottom, Three Mile Island, and the Peach Bottom manifests are worse. They have no idea what's in there. They have no idea what it's cleaning up. You know, I think that is something that the public needs to know. The waste doesn't go away. It doesn't disappear. There's no Hollywood ending here. People need to understand the Faustian bargain. Yes, you'll get energy for a moment. You'll get radioactive waste forever. Forever is hard for people to grasp. I can say to you, hey, we'll meet tomorrow. I'll get up at 7. That's a definitive coordinate. I get it. I'll go to sleep at 11. The TMI accident never ends. Forever's a long time. Based on the question you asked me about how much fuel, we argued that there was more because we argued that if the fuel is rebundled in a way, probably by accident, it could go recritical. They ignored our request for a fire study, a terrorism study. So you have Unit 2, which is the whole building is radioactive. To put it in a way that people understand, it goes back to time. There hasn't been a human entry into the basement of TMI-2 since 1947. This stuff's not going to go away. It's not going to disappear. It's here and it's here forever. The people that bought the plant, TMI-2 Solutions is a private equity group. So among the people that actually now have ownership in TMI-2 are Sara Lee Cake and TGI Fridays restaurants. So this is what's happened all around the industry. You got private equity. Nuclear usually doesn't draw private investment. The end of nuclear power, the cleanup gets private equity because they raid the trust fund.
We'll continue with this week's featured interview with Eric Epstein of Three Mile Island Alert in just a moment. But first, nuclear awareness keeps growing in the general population. The U.S. has gone to war with Iraq over their nuclear program while ramping up our own to add to the more than 5,000 weapons we've already stockpiled. The daily existential fears many of us lived with during the first Cold War are coming back in spades to haunt and frighten new generations with a vision of planetary apocalypse. And I hate to be the one to say it, but it's not impossible. And that is why you need Nuclear Hot Seat. Every week, we provide a regular dose of nuclear news with context and continuity so you can understand what's going on. And it's something you can count on. Nuclear Hot Seat is the longest-running program that focuses exclusively on nuclear issues. Now in its 15th year as a podcast and 10th year as a broadcast through Pacifica, we have a long history of scooping mainstream media on nuclear issues. We also work behind the scenes, providing links and introductions between activists, researchers, reporters, and whistleblowers so that the true nuclear story gets out far beyond this show. But in order to keep doing the work, we need your help. This show runs on donations, and we are always in need of your support. Be it a one-time donation of any amount or a recurring donation of as little as $5. That's the same as what you would spend here in the U.S. for a nice cup of coffee. All of it counts towards meeting our monthly nut. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that your donations are tax deductible. And you can help us by going to nuclearhotseat.com, click on the red donate button, or if you have Zelle, send money directly to info@nuclearhotseat.com. Don't wait. Go to nuclearhotseat.com to donate right now and know that whatever you can do to help, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now back to the conclusion of this week's featured interview on 3 Mile Island at 47 with Eric Epstein of 3 Mile Island Alert. Why is this happening? Why so much action around nuclear, especially dead nuclear? And I think the answer to that is follow the money.
Right.
What was the decommissioning fund? Where did that money come from and where has it been going?
When the TMI accident occurred, nobody had the vision to think, how are we going to clean these plants up? So there was no decommissioning fund. So when the accident occurred, there was no fund. Governor Thornburgh put together a plan, defueling, removing the fuel, because the company had no money. TMI Alert supported it. It was better than having a bankrupt company. It was just under $1 billion to remove the fuel. And again, we didn't feel we should pay for it. We took the case to court, actually the consumer advocate, and we lost. We were told, yeah, you have to pay the money. Even though the plant really wasn't online long enough, the intent was it to be online long enough. Yeah, I drove a lot of non-drinking people to drink. So by the time the plant was sold or transferred actually to TMI2 Solutions, organized in Delaware, based in Utah, they were like cowboys. Everybody was going, man, do you think you can clean it up cheaper? Now you're out of your mind. It's not going to cost $1 billion or $2 billion or $3 billion. So they announced 2 months ago, and we told the public this was going to happen. They're going to take a pause. You can't clean the plant up while you're restarting another plant. They would have taken a pause any money. They would have stopped the cleanup anyway because they complained they were out of money. So they spent $500 million, really haven't made any progress. They're going to wind down till 2029. Earliest that TMI2 can be cleaned up, earliest, 2074. And that's not going to happen in 2074 because it gets so crazy with TMI. I just redefine weirdness on an hourly basis. TMI2, which is shut down and can never operate again, is going to ask for a license extension. So they want the plant to be cleaned up at the same time as TMI1. It is my belief that neither plant's getting cleaned up. The island's going to be a radioactive waste site. And if anybody should have learned the lesson, it should have been us in Pennsylvania. If you look around the state, we have the most abandoned oil and gas wells. We have the most abandoned coal mines. We have 40 coal fires burning right now. We're the citadel of darkness. You know, people talk about nuclear, and, oh, it's the Renaissance, and which means you came from the Dark Ages. No, where nuclear's at, they went from the Dark Ages to the Renaissance, and they're in reverse for the Stone Age. People need to understand, man, it's going to cost a lot of money to clean up our mines, our oil wells, and nuclear waste. It's not something we talk about now. You know, we're so intoxicated with nuclear, it's hard to have a logical conversation with somebody.
So at this time, Unit 2, the one that had the meltdown, and I refuse to call it a partial meltdown. That's industry talk. That's like saying you're a little bit pregnant.
Right, right.
It was a meltdown. That one still has a percentage of its fuel on site with the likelihood that it and the radioactive building, because that's what's happened to the building, will not be removed.
Correct. People need to understand because Unit 2, Unit 1 has an independent spent fuel storage facility. It's full. They're building another one. TMI2 is building a mini facility. And so that's a lot of waste being stored on site. But what people don't know is that the Department of Energy pays them to keep the fuel on site. So in 98, 33 utilities sued the government and said, hey, you guys failed to provide us with a radioactive waste site, despite the fact they kept generating waste. So there was a settlement, and the Department of Energy said, we will pay you forward to store the waste on site because we did not find a high-level radioactive waste site. We, the government, Department of Energy, through the Department of Treasury, will pay each site that has waste millions of dollars every year. So these sites are never going to get cleaned up because you make money by doing nothing. By doing nothing. So TMI2, by building a waste site, it's interesting because they call it a spent fuel site, although they say all the fuel's gone. The industry is induced to do nothing to make money to leave the waste there.
That's such backwards thinking, but it's so typical of the nuclear industry to find ways to siphon the money off. And this is from the decommissioning fund, correct?
No, this is separate. That's where it gets even wackier. The decommissioning fund came from ratepayers. It is now controlled by a private equity. That's separate. They get money in addition to that from the taxpayer-supported nuclear waste fund. So these guys are making money hand over fist, and they'd be making money if they were doing nothing. It's insane. The only consistent themes here is the taxpayer and ratepayer wind up being the investor and the debt.
This is, of course, all very emotional and very personal for me, having been 1 mile away when the accident happened, or when the incompetence happened.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
Now let's shift the attention to Unit 1, because that was in operation. It was shut down, it was restarted, and it ran for a number of years. And now it has been shut down, but there's talk to bring it back. Fill us in on what that's about.
So Unit 1 was actually offline when the accident occurred to refuel. The NRC ordered it to be shut down. The company wanted to open it, and it was a pretty pitched battle until October 4th, 1985. So the plant operated, it came online on October 4th, 85 again. Pennsylvania became a deregulated state, and we have five plants. We have the second largest concentration of nuclear energy in the country. And they all complained, you know, that if we go to deregulation, we're going to need to be bailed out. We have stranded costs, stranded investments. So there is a utility to the north of us that's called Susquehanna. It's a nuclear power plant. You know, there is different cases for different nuclear power plants, and I was involved in that litigation. Currently, Susquehanna, 2,500 megawatts, big plant, is going to sell half its energy to Amazon. That's now, back then, I remember saying, and I don't want to use the language on your show, but I said, looking to the executives, this is the last effing time, right? You guys aren't coming back again because I'm not going through this bull again with you guys. $2.86 billion. They got bailed out. So TMI also got bailed out, but from another company. And I said, look, you guys want to be big boys? You want to be capitalists? You want to compete in the marketplace? That's all I've ever asked for. Let the consumer decide. And so they lost $300 million in 8 years. And the market shut the plant down. And I'm like, okay, so it happens. Now what we found out at Palisades in Michigan and then Duane Arnold in Iowa and then Three Mile Island, it's much cheaper to restart a zombie plant. Much cheaper. So they're trying to grandfather the previous licenses. Each plant I just named, the first three that are going to be restarted, all have agreements to data centers. It's so you're starting up nuclear plants, largely financed by the government, to provide energy in another zip code.
And for a commercial enterprise.
Yes, I mean, a very profitable commercial enterprise. There's three profit sectors here. So what you need to understand is that for the most part, these ventures, restarting nuclear power plants, are not only financed by the federal government for the most part, the fuel is subsidized by the government, which is a different profit center. And then at the end of the day, the data centers are using it for whatever use they're going to use it for. But at TMI, just to give you an example how egregious it is, we don't know what the exact contract. That's private between Microsoft and Constellation. But we understood that they paid $128 for a megawatt. At that time, megawatts were selling for $48. So they grossly overpaid to make sure they have the energy. But on the back end, the federal government helps subsidize the energy purchase. So I know it sounds technical, but you need to understand there's different profit centers at every nuclear power plant funded by the federal government. So whether it's building the plant, whether it's storing the waste, or whether it's paying for the energy, this is a massive jobs program for the industry.
So TMI-1, which is the one that didn't melt down but has been shut down since 2019, has been the equivalent of a car being up on the blocks, not being used, not being run. What kind of rationale is being given for this being a good idea to try and restart such a defunct piece of equipment?
The justification is we're competing against the Chinese, so we need to ramp up as quickly as possible. That justification is horse hockey. I mean, these plants are old. So just think about this. Okay, we got to prepare for the future. We got to beat the Chinese. So we're going to restart an antique. Okay, everybody's buying it. Where's the energy going? Not to the people, to the data centers. And you hear Trump saying it's going to go down. No, the prices are going to go up. There's only so much energy. And so we are restarting these ETSLs, the nuclear ETSLs, to power data centers. This has never been done before, where you restart a power plant for one exclusive customer. It's crazy. And these guys, some of them, not all of them, don't want to pay the fees for distribution and transmission. I don't know how the country enjoys being mugged, but they're being mugged. They're being pounded. And the biggest proponents are Democratic governors, Governor of Maryland, Governor of Pennsylvania, Governor of Michigan, Governor of New York, Governor of California, are the biggest cheerleaders for nuclear.
Makes me wonder what's in their war chests for the next run that they're doing for a higher office.
Great, great point, because it's a brilliant move. If you are pro-nuke, you now have unfettered access to union money and unfettered access to big tech money. Bingo. It's a brilliant political move, horrible consumer move.
Here in California, Gavin Newsom did an absolute 180 on nuclear, where starting out, he was against nuclear. He started moving towards when Diablo Canyon was supposed to shut down. And all of a sudden, he's running for president. And even before that, he completely changed his stance and was in favor of Diablo Canyon continuing forward. Now, of course, he's clearly running for president, but the pro-nuclear stance carries, and it's a complete contradiction of his previous position.
But it's smart politics. It's labor money, labor votes, tech money in a state that's high tech. And like I said, they're all doing it. The problem is, this is going to be very similar and unfortunate to the Iraq War, where there was unequivocal political and popular support until there wasn't. It's going to melt away. That you can't afford to do what they're thinking about doing. And then in terms of economics, we have a term called externalities. There's going to be costs that aren't captured. There's going to be health issues. There's going to be safety issues. These are old plants. You just can't walk down to Pep Boys and say, hey, you know, I need a new PORV, or hey, I need a new steam generator tube. So these plants are going to be pushed to operate at high levels with equipment that's questionable. There's no getting around that right now.
Given that these are changes taking place in communities around Three Mile Island that have already been traumatized by the meltdown that happened, what kind of input have they been allowed to this process with, say, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
It's a dog and pony show. It always has. You know, I've been doing this 45 years, and rarely is the public given an opportunity to ask questions and to have them answered. You now go to these meetings and you ask a question, maybe they'll answer it. Usually they won't. There's no transcript. The NRC is a captured industry. It's an appendage of the nuclear power industry. But what has been even more galling is, so are the state agencies, so are the other federal agencies. The NRC has been disbanded. It's attached to the industry, and it's now under control of the Department of Energy. I would say the community is probably even split, but it's generational. The younger people tend to support nuclear, and you see that at the meetings we go to. It's very reminiscent of the mid-70s, where, you know, the people that were critical of nuclear were on the fringe. The people that supported it were mainstream, well-heeled. We've had two meetings. It's all kind of choreographed. It's not going to matter. Look, you can be pro-nuclear, anti-nuclear, thermonuclear. I don't give a damn what it is. But you don't invest $2 billion on a plant that ain't going to restart. Decision was made. It was made two springs ago. The president, Joe Dominguez of Constellation, on a financial call indicated they were going to restart the plant. The plant's going to be restarted. The same with the other plants. And it's a colossal miscalculation.
How does the NRC's recent weakening of its radiation safety standards play into the situation at Three Mile Island?
Actually, in a positive way, as bizarre as that sounds. So weakening the radiation standard has actually been opposed by a lot of pro-nuclear folks. The people that are supporting the restart, there is a split. There's some of the people that oppose the restart of Three Mile Island for two reasons. They don't want it to restart with lax radiation standards, but nobody can explain how you do an emergency plan and have it approved when FEMA is non-existent. Nobody answers the phone. So here, the people that are supposed to be Johnny on the spot, man, they're never around. You never see them at a meeting.
So much of this information is covered in very clear detail in the newsletter that TMI Alert puts out. And I'm going to link to that on the website so that people can follow up, because there are a lot of aspects that we're not going to have time to get into, including very influential and important people who have said, restart's not going to happen. It can't happen. It shouldn't happen. Please don't do this.
Right. People come up to me all the time because they don't believe it. I said, yeah. I said, it's going to restart. TMI Alert's not going to be able to bail you out. We're going to get crushed. We're litigating at the NRC. We're litigating at the Susquehanna River Basin Commission. We're litigating at the Department of Environmental Protection. But it's all the same. You never have anybody in any of these agencies. You can be pro-nuclear and a safety expert. Everywhere you go, it's like a pep rally. Everybody has their nuclear pom-poms out. Oh, we're green. It's, oh, okay, you guys are green? How does a toxic waste become green? Now, we're not going to talk about it. You don't know what you're talking about. Had one young kid, I'm going into the industry, and you guys got to stop thinking about waste like it is in The Simpsons. And it's like, dude, you're not from the area. You don't know what you're talking about. And this is a criticism of modern America culture. I think most people have the attention span of a fruit fly. If you look at the argument I laid out, it's pretty dense and pretty compact. And most people, I don't want to hear it. You know, I don't hear it. What I learned years ago was that my Jewish mother in February didn't care about anything that she should have enough energy to blow dry her hair. So now you got to think about a way to get to green so most consumers don't change their habits. Because right now we're going through rate shock. I don't know how it is in California, across the country. Our rates are just jetting off the top. And meanwhile, we had Chris Wright come to TMI, Secretary of Energy. It was awful.
What did he come for, and what was so awful about it?
Before he came, they had a party in July. It was like 100 degrees. I was outside the fence. And this is true. You know, they were announcing that TMI is back. Microsoft was there. PJM was there. The NRC was there. You know who else was there? Miss America. Miss America.
Trying to make nuclear sexy.
Yeah. We have that one group out west. The mother, when she was pregnant, posed next to a dry cast.
And has anybody ever done a follow-up on her to find out how the kid is?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Hopefully the kid's all right. But Chris Wright did a quick through, and it was more for him touting the Trump energy plan. Nuclear's back, drill, baby, drill, this, that, the other thing. He was in New York last week supporting the restart of Indian Point. The midterms can't come quick enough. But what I've told people is not enough money. You know, these are all fantasies. You got right now, if you look at our culture, young people paying off college debts, can't afford a home. When they see their electric bill, they're going to just say, no, how do we do it cheaper? And how do we cleaner? You know, people say, as I said earlier, this is the Renaissance, which means you came from a dark age. We're going to a stone age. You know, this is not, even if you look at countries that we feel we're competing against, China is all in on solar. You know, renewable energies across the world are killing it. They're cheaper. They're accessible. There's no fuel product except us.
What is the timeline that they are saying it's going to be before TMI-1 is back online?
Next year, 2027. I mean, the timeline's artificial. I believe nothing good happens when you're Russian, especially history.
I say about nuclear, the two words you don't want to hear in connection with it are cheaper and faster.
Yeah, this is consistent. Nuclear is always behind schedule, always over budget. If you look at the new plant down in Georgia, you know, it was behind schedule 7 years, and I think it came in at $32 billion, and it was projected to be $15, $16 billion. It's going to be expensive, but this is what's different this time. You don't get the fruits of nuclear energy. This is going to private companies. People aren't getting that. You're not putting any energy on the grid. You're just basically diverting it to other profit centers. So it'll take people a while to catch up, but they will. This is not going to be viewed as a high point in the history of American democracy.
Any thoughts you'd like to share that we haven't had a chance to get to yet?
No, I just think it's important for people to continue to participate. You need to develop a public record. You need to demand answers. This is no different. I feel like we're back in the times of John Goffman in the 70s and clamshell. We're on the periphery. We're correct because we research and we're thorough and we know what we're doing. But right now there's a tide of idiocy that's covering the country, not just in nuclear, but just about everything. I mean, and it's not a good place. My advice to everybody is three words. I'm a basketball fan, and what the college tournament's on now. Survive in advance. Survive in advance. Keep plucking away. Keep hitting away. It's going to be more gorilla than it is giant. But at the end of the day, we'll be okay because we're right.
One final question. We've been doing these interviews for years now.
Yeah.
And at some point, I don't know, maybe 5, 6 years ago, you were saying, well, after like next year, I think I'm finally going to be able to retire from this. Where are your plans now?
There are no plans for retirement. You know, I always had in the corner of my head, some people wanted to go down and celebrate the closure of TMI. I said, we're not doing that. I said, it's not a time to celebrate when people leave their job. That being said, really disappointed how the pro-nuclear people are behaving. I think this is sad. One thing in common, pro-nuclear, anti-nuclear, the people at the helm, the people that have experience are starting to age out. You're not going to be able to get workers for the power plants, and we're not going to be able to find, what am I going to tell a young person? All right, get involved with nuclear. You're going to lose 100% of the time. You're not going to make any money. That next generation, I don't see quite yet. So you hang in there, hope something else breaks, but yeah, retirement, nah, not in this lifetime.
At least that gives me the advantage of having you to talk to on an ongoing basis.
Well, you know, okay, my philosophy has always been this. Radiation doesn't take vacations, and neither do we.
Eric Epstein, it's always a great connection to make with you, to be able to discuss Three Mile Island this openly for all the dreadfulness that is there. And I want to thank you for, again, being our annual expert, bringing us up to date on what's happening at Three Mile Island for Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you for doing what you do, and I'll see you next year.
Eric Epstein of Three Mile Island Alert. We'll have links up to Three Mile Island Alert and especially their newsletter on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 769. Our thanks to filmmaker Robbie Lepser, producer of the 2-hour audio documentary, Voices from Three Mile Island, for his permission to use excerpts from that work in this program.
Activists, shout out, shout out, shout out.
If you want to know more details about my personal story of having been at Three Mile Island when it happened, my book, Yes, I Glow in the Dark, 1 mile from 3 Mile Island to Fukushima and Nuclear Hot Seat, tells the saga from Cold War duck and cover all the way through to what it took for me to start this program. You can access it directly on Amazon, or you can click through on the website, nuclearhotseat.com. We always have a link to it there so that you can access the book easily. And in a development I've been aiming at for a while and am just now able to accomplish, each week's episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is now going to come with a transcript. It will usually appear within 2 days of the show actually having posted, and we will be working back in time to catch up. Right now we have about 4 or 5 that have had transcripts on them. So you have another way to access the information from Nuclear Hot Seat. Just go to the program page and click on the download link. Again, we're just in the process of rolling this out, so hang with us. But the goal is for every week you to have a written version of that week's show. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, March 24th, 2026. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email each week, go to the website. There's a yellow box. Put in your first name and an email address. Send it to us, and we will send you once a week a link to that week's show as soon as it posts and a brief summary of the information that's in it. Never miss a single episode moving forward. Now, if you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send that to us in an email at info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, big one here, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, thank you. Any amount will help us out, and we really appreciate your support. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2026, Libby Halevi and Nuclear Hot Seat. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guests whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you, the Faustian bargain with nuclear is that you get electricity for a minute and radioactive waste forever. Eric Epstein of 3 Mile Island Alert. There you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.